is that in many ways, the whole mortgage business has become a commoditized business, but the banks don't want you to know it's a commoditized business. They want you to think that they hold the keys of the kingdom. And if you go to them, then they can offer you this special deal. But, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is kind of what led you to this project in the first place.
One of the things I've always found is that you've got to start with the customer experience and work backwards to the technology. You can't start with the technology and try to figure out where you're going to try to sell it. And I've made this mistake probably more than anybody else in this room.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to Milkshake's Markets Madness. My name is John Kutzmita. This is Brent Johnson. Every week we come to you to talk about financial markets, the madness that follows the markets, and a little bit of Brent's dollar milkshake theory. Now, it seemed like for a very long time that the U.S. was destined for recession given the aggressive Fed policy, the tightening of interest rates. Yet we haven't really seen that, and it's kind of been going on now for 2 years. We started to slowly see a pullback in the tech sector recently where Tesla was a darling in the tech space, started to lose some traction. Nvidia, which everyone was in love with the last handful of months, started to pull back a bit. But then going into earnings seasons, Brent, it seems like we've had some surprise. You know, some of these companies didn't necessarily meet expectations, but you know, the guidance that they provided caused, you know, the stock to do some pretty crazy things after the fact. What have you been seeing this week in the tech market, and what has it been telling you so far?
Well, we saw a complete reversal this week in the tech market, and kind of a somewhat of a reversal overall. So, you know, over the last couple of weeks, we've started to or continue to get inflationary data that came in at least at expectations and a little bit higher than expectations. And as a result, it started taking away the rate cut expectations. And that first showed up in the bond market. It started to show up in the currency market. And over the previous 2 weeks until this week, that's when it finally showed up in the equity market. And we had a pretty strong drawdown in the equity market, not this week, but the prior 2 weeks. And, you know, as of a week ago, last Friday, you know, I think the Dow was kind of flat for the year. The S&P was up 3 or 4% for the year. The Russell was down for the year. And I think the NASDAQ was up a couple percent for the year. But this week, to your point, we had a number of earnings, and, you know, Tesla, everybody was expecting bad numbers, did kind of get bad numbers, but not as bad as everybody expected. And they guided in a way that the market found favorable, and it rebounded. Meta guided horribly and was down like 10%, but it rebounded today. Google and what was the other one? You know, they really outdid themselves, had a very good expectations or good results. And I think and they had one of their best days in years today. And so, you know, this week, the NASDAQ rallied 4%, the Dow rallied 2%, and the S&P rallied 3%. So definite reversal from last week. And this is what's interesting is this was pretty much earnings driven, because for the most part, even over the last couple of days, we had some more inflationary data come in and the market kind of shrugged it off. So I don't know if it got all the bad juju out last couple of weeks and it bounced this week, or if they're just looking forward to next week when we've got the Fed coming in and they think the Fed's going to be dovish. But, you know, big reversal this week. And so it's going to be interesting to see how we go next week and into the summer now.
Yeah, definitely interesting. Microsoft was probably one of the other ones that you're reaching for that was right in line with Google. What else has been keeping your attention so far markets this week?
Well, really, you know, it's just kind of more of the same, you know, these inflationary expectations, and we've got the Fed next week. It's been very interesting. You know, I think it's really interesting that the markets bounced as hard as they did this week, because they bounced largely again on tech earnings, and tech was kind of hit the hardest over the previous couple of weeks. And so, you know, where tech was dragging the market down, now tech has kind of pulled the market back up. I still believe that we're going to see higher rates. You know, the US 10-year is now up to like 4.6. What is it? 4.6. It was actually 4.7 at one point this week. I think we're probably going to see a 5 number at some point, you know, and I think that that is going to have market impacts. And so, you know, we've talked for a long time that we thought that we would get at least somewhat of a correction in equity markets. We got a little bit of one. I don't think that was all that there will be, but maybe. I mean, again, I don't know for sure, but I'm most interested to see in what expectations are kind of coming out of the Fed meeting, because, you know, when we came into the year, there was these expectations for these Magnificent Seven rate hikes. And those have, for the most part, kind of been swept away now. But markets have held up relatively well. And so I think next week with the Fed coming out, because it's not just what the Fed says next week that's important. What's going to happen is what's going on with all the other currencies, right? And, you know, it's now kind of, I think it's kind of getting to be expectations that the Euro ECB will probably cut before the Fed, or at least the Fed's probably not going to out hawk the ECB. And what we have on the other side of the world in Japan, I mean, we certainly have to talk about the yen. I mean, the yen just keeps falling. You know, I said for years that the yen would go to 150 and then 200 and then 250. Well, we've blown through 150. We're at 158, almost 159 today. The Bank of Japan put out like a 2-sentence statement. You know, you get the Fed statement, it's like 2 or 3 pages. And the BOJ statement was like 2 sentences. And basically, you know, what's happening with the yen is what everybody fears one day will happen with the dollar. And this is what I've long said is, you know, all these things that people want to attribute to, you know, bad happening to the dollar, they'll happen at some point. It's just they're happening everywhere else first. And so it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with the yen next week. And, you know, we're getting to the point where they're going to have to try some kind of intervention. But they're in such a tough spot because if they, you know, if they save the currency, then they kill the JGB market. So I'm really curious to see what they do and whether they actually do something concrete or if it's just more jawboning.
Well, you know, China's been back in the conversation as well. It seems like they're aggressively acquiring anything that, you know, is either commodity or hard asset, gold being one of the big ones. And, you know, one would speculate that given the state of their economy and some of this, you know, activity that they're doing in the background, that they might be up to something in the currency markets as well.
Well, I think there's a lot of people out there who think that China is just sitting there and the U.S. is running over there begging China to buy our bonds. And, you know, I think that's crazy talk. You know, that's to completely misunderstand the way hegemony works and the way power works. Now, I know there's a lot of people out there think that the U.S. is no longer the hegemon, but the U.S. still thinks it's a hegemon. So, again, you have to think like they do. And, you know, the U.S. does not run around and beg anybody to buy their bonds. They might tell people to buy their bonds, but they don't go around begging people to buy their bonds. Meanwhile, you know, China's currency continues to fall. Their stock market continues to fall. There was some, you know, chatter over the last couple of days in an article written by Timmeros from the Wall Street Journal about how, you know, Trump, if he gets into office, wants to have more say over what monetary policy is in the U.S. And people said, oh, see, this is another reason that, you know, the dollar is going to lose the GRC status and, you know, the U.S. is no longer the global hegemon. Meanwhile, a couple of weeks ago, Z literally told the PBOC to start buying more bonds, you know, after 10 years. So, you know, it's just, to me, it's more of this nonsense. And people create these narratives that don't exist in the real world because it kind of fits what they want to be happening as opposed to what's really happening. But, you know, one thing I did want to ask you about, John, is, you know, going back to not only the tech market, but I had an interaction with a guy online today talking about real estate. And I know, you know, that's your area of expertise. And you actually have a project that you've been working on pretty hard. And it's really kind of come to fruition here in the last week or so. So I actually want to talk to you about that today.
I mean, I'd be happy to share it. It's something I'm very excited about. I know sometimes our audiences are very passionate about getting as much Brent Johnson as they can every week. But I do think this is something that adds a ton of value. It's not just a pat on the back. But I'll start out by saying, while everyone is still listening, to visit lendzen.com. That's lend, L-E-N-D, zen, Z-E-N.com. I think the app itself speaks for itself, but I'm happy to share more.
Well, yeah, and I think people know that I've been in this business for a long time, and they know you and I are friends, and they know you're a smart guy from our conversations. But I don't know that they know what your primary, occupation has been for several years. And so I'll set up for people that don't know. John grew up in Philadelphia, but for whatever reason, did not like the winters in Philadelphia, and ended up matriculating to the North Shore of Hawaii, where he was neighbors with the most famous surfers in the world. And along the way, he somehow started a real estate business and was very successful in the real estate business, offered mortgages not only in Hawaii, but through much of the Western United States. And what I always found interesting is when I would talk to John about markets is he always knew exactly what was going on in the bond market. And, one of the long-term narratives, as long as I've been in the business, is that, the fixed income guys are the smart guys and the equity guys are the dumb guys. And so the fact when I first met John, he knew everything that was going on in the fixed income market. And he was talking about treasury curves and, the swap rates and stuff. And I was like, well, this guy knows markets pretty well. And so I think that's interesting for your business, because what I think a lot of people don't know, and I think also part of the reason why you're doing what you're doing, is that in many ways, the whole mortgage business has become a commoditized business. But the banks don't want you to know it's a commoditized business. They want you to think that they hold the keys of the kingdom. And if you go to them, then they can offer you this special deal. But, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is kind of what led you to this project in the first place.
I mean, that was a brilliant commercial right there. I think I'll just clip it and replay that. you told my bio well. I know a thing or two about good tequila as well. That's something that usually goes along with our conversations. But no, I appreciate the intro. I mean, the mortgage industry has been a commodity for a long time. And it's interesting talking about, AI, because in a lot of cases, the mortgage world was very early to AI. There's, names like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, everyone's familiar with those names, but they've had automated underwriting models since, the 90s. And the entire industry feeds, their loans into these matrix style footprints and lets the computer decide if it's a sellable loan or not. And the entire market buys into these mortgage backed securities and these mortgage pools. And as a result, they're receiving mortgage bonds. And that market, that's in a lot of ways, that subsidized market, especially, after the GFC, has been where almost all interest rates have been derived. I mean, banks and lenders no longer individually, are making loan decisions and interest rate decisions. They're not looking at you, Brent, and saying, hey, we're going to give you this interest rate because we know you, trust you, like you, you've banked with us for 20 years. You either fit the matrix or you don't. Now, there's alternative loan programs that have come out. They're classified as non-conforming or non-QM. You can get a loan now based on just property cash flows. All that stuff is kind of a sidebar, because 80% of the mortgage financing world thrives on the fact that they can offset the risk to somebody else, to the bond market. And because of that, interest rates are more or less the same across the country. And that really gave us an opportunity when building this tech AI and this mortgage AI to be able to use something that's standardized. And so, I think one of the big gaps with releasing this is, yeah, people don't realize that, no matter who you talk to, everyone's going to sell you the same rate based on how the bond market is trading mortgage bonds that day. What you're actually shopping for generally is price, like what kind of margin an individual lender is going to put on top of what the bond market is willing to pay. And so we've been able to more or less democratize that interest rate information, where everyone who's tried to shop for a mortgage, whether buying a house or refinancing, knows what it's like trying to get a rate quote. It's like pulling teeth. It's this real bait and switch type of process. you know, you get walked through a website that asks a bunch of questions. And at the end, you don't actually get a rate quote. You just get a form that says, submit your name, email, and phone number, and someone will talk to you. So all you're really doing is committing yourself to a lead propagation pool. And then you're getting phone calls from, you know, 10 different people that all sound like the, you know, the mortgage brokers in The Big Short. And so what we did is, I feel like in the real estate world, a good analogy is how Zillow, being one of the first to take this MLS data, where all this, you know, national real estate listing data was only available to real estate agents who were part of, you know, that realtor cartel, so to speak, and had access to the MLS. And they made it public. They put it online and they democratized that information. And so what we did first with LendZen is democratize interest rates. So interest rates change every day, technically every millisecond, because the bond market's a living, breathing organism, and that's how those instruments trade. So interest rates are changing that frequently. So even if you were to get a rate quote from somebody, it's different a few hours later, and for certain, it's different the next day. So we democratize the interest rate info. You can go on there, you can price a loan, you can get real-time interest rates using the same tech that everyone in the industry uses to live price loans. We democratize that so you get access to it. There's no login information, no credentials required. We don't ask who you are, your phone number, none of that stuff. So that's step number one. The other thing that I think people oftentimes don't realize when it comes to making a loan decision, and certainly the mortgage rate world, is that because of how things are structured in the mortgage-backed securities and you know, different investors buying into these mortgage coupon pools, is that, you know, the higher the interest rate goes, the more attractive it is to investors. They're going to get a higher yield. So they're willing to pay more for that type of mortgage. Vice versa, it's the lower you go, the more expensive it gets. And I think a lot of people have heard the vocabulary of points and things like that. Well, oftentimes that's very ambiguous. Are you talking about the entire cost of the loan? Are you talking about origination fees, what the mortgage company gets? Or are you just talking about what we refer to as the discount fee, or what you have to pay to get that lower rate? So any given day, those things are moving around. And depending on your timeline, you know, a higher rate might make more sense than the lower rate, just because it's not going to cost you as much. That type of analytics and analysis is not easy to do. I'm not trying to, you know, take stabs at anybody, but most people in the mortgage industry don't know how to do those calculations. But we baked all of that into the app. And so, long story short, to wrap it up here, I mean, you can go through the entire journey of seeing what rates are real time, go all the way to an end with a very, very clear, concise analysis. And it's very dynamic. You can interact with those numbers, change the timeline that you think you're going to be on, and instantly basically get all of that solved for you. So it's, and I think it's, you know, of course I'm biased because we built it. It's been something we've been thinking about for a long time. It's something that took 2 years to bring to fruition. It's finally live. And I really think this is a mortgage disruption tool. I think this is going to be the early stages of completely changing how people interact with the mortgage process. And I think we're very proud to be part of that movement.
Well, I'm excited for you, because I've played around with the app a little bit, and you know, whenever I've gotten a mortgage in the past, I won't sit here and say it was an enjoyable experience. It was more of a pain in the butt. And you know, anytime you can kind of disrupt some kind of an industry and make the user experience more interesting and more easy, I think you have something. And so, you know, I would encourage anybody out there who's interested in mortgages, or looking for a mortgage or refinance or whatever it is, you know, check out LendZen. And, you know, I'll give it the shameless plug, because I've played around with it and I know how much work you put into it. And so anyway, LendZen.com.
Well, look, Brett, we're friends. And because of that, I know when a reaction is sincere or not. And so far, for the most part, the people who've played with it have been, you know, close friends, family, et cetera. We haven't really rolled it out aggressively yet. And so I know you've enjoyed it simply because it was a pure reaction of like, wow, this thing is really, really cool. And, you know, you make the point about disruption, and, you know, you look at industries, I think like what Uber did, you know, the taxi experience was horrible. The cars were dirty. Customer service was bad. You know, you look at most industries that ultimately end up being disrupted, and it's because those industries have neglected the customer experience so much. you know, the real estate agents are going through this, or at least the National Association of Realtors just went through this huge class action settlement of over $400 million. I think for an industry to get to the point where that has to happen before you start questioning whether you're actually providing a high level of service says all that needs to be said. And I think that the mortgage world has been in a very similar place where it's just a lot of bait and switch, a lot of lead magnet type of traps when someone just really wants a simple answer to a simple question, which is, you know, what mortgage should I choose? So I think, you know, we made the customer experience the priority. And again, of course I'm biased, but please go try it out. Leave the feedback. You know, I wouldn't say it's beta. I think this is, you know, this project's ready for prime time, but we're also open to feedback. But I'm very proud of what I feel like is the ultimate customer experience in mortgages.
Well, I'm curious, like when I wake up in the morning, the first thing I grab my phone, the first thing I look at is the price of gold. And I've done that for 20 years. And I don't know why, but that's always the first thing I look at. And the reason I always look at gold is because I feel like if something really important has happened, gold will probably have reacted. And if gold hasn't moved more than 10 or 15 bucks, it's not a move to me. And really gold has to move more than 20 bucks for it to kind of get my attention. But that's the first thing I look at in the morning. And the second thing I look at is the futures markets. I'm curious, like when you wake up in the morning, what's the first thing you look at since you've always worked in this industry?
Yeah, well, unfortunately for the last 2 years and for the previous, you know, 18, the 20 years I've been in this business, it's always the bond market. It's always the 10-year treasury and then mortgage-backed securities. And yeah, I mean, look, the last 2 years have been brutal. I mean, we all know what has gone on in interest rates. What a lot of people don't realize is that, you know, the Fed policy matters, but what matters more is why the Fed is implementing their policy, which in this case is inflation. And bond traders, bond holders hate inflation. It erodes the principal value of their investment. And so, you know, people have been throwing bonds out the window hand over fist. And as a result, you've seen a huge increase in mortgage rates because the rate is inverse the bond price. So as people have been selling bonds, the bond price has crashed. And as a result, you know, the rate on these mortgage-backed securities or what the market is willing to take for a mortgage-backed security has rapidly increased. But you know, we all know it's been a 40-year bull market in bonds. You know, I've enjoyed that ride. Is it over? Who knows? But you know, people are still going to need financing, you know, to buy a house. Leverage is one of the things that makes real estate so interesting. But one thing I'll say about LensEnd.com and this app that we built, I refer to it as an app because you'll see when you experience it, it feels like an app, but it's just a website. You don't have to download anything. But you know, the idea that low rate doesn't always mean the best loan is very important because if you were going to speculate on what, you know, it's very relevant to the conversations that we have here every week. If you're going to speculate on what the Fed is going to do over the next 18 months, 24 months, if you think this is kind of the end of the hiking cycle, if you think we're headed towards some dramatic crash or recession, well, most likely that's going to be at least short-term bullish for bonds. And that means most likely mortgage rates over the next 2 years will see some type of improvement. And oftentimes the entire time in my career, I've seen people do what I refer to as chase rate. They are so obsessed about getting the lowest rate possible and the lowest payment as possible, which I can empathize with. We live and eat payment, right? But if you end up paying for an interest rate that, you know, 6 to 12 months from now potentially becomes irrelevant because rates move lower or the cost of the rate that you paid 20 grand for is now zero, you just made a huge financial mistake. And I think that's another component of making a mortgage decision that people don't realize. It's this living, breathing organism. And oftentimes the most important investment decision you're making is not the property, it's how you leverage or finance the property. And it's one area that I've seen people make a mistake in over and over and over again. So we are trying to eliminate the human component where you have to go and talk to somebody to get that guidance when generally you're not going to get the right guidance anyway. We've completely eliminated the subjectivity to this. Like when you use LensEnd.com and you're at the end of the mortgage summary and you're seeing all the recommendations, it's purely math driven. The only variable that matters is how long that you think you're going to be in this loan, either before you sell or based on, you know, market conditions that you think potentially can create an environment that you can refinance?
Well, what do you think of, you know, because housing prices for the most part have held up and a lot of people have expected them to come down and they just haven't. You know, my mother-in-law in California is getting ready to sell her house and it's, you know, it's, she first started thinking about selling this house 10 years ago. And over that 10 years, the price has doubled and it's now, you know, it when she sells it, it'll go for a record price or close to it. For a record price for her neighborhood, right?
Right.
And so, and this is despite rates going higher. And so, you know, we've talked about this on our show a lot, not necessarily specific to real estate, but just rates going higher don't necessarily mean things crash, right? And it, if you take them high enough, it eventually will, of course. You know, you can't take rates to 100% because, you know, then, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. But going with rates going from, you know, 0 to 5%, a lot of people thought that was going to be absolutely horrible for the market. And initially it was, but really in my mind, stability of rates is probably just as important as absolute level of rates. One of the things that made rates going higher in 2022, the reason markets sold off is there's so much uncertainty about where they were going to be 2 or 3 months from now, right? But once they kind of leveled off around the 5% mark and people realized, hey, the world hasn't ended. And you know what? If my competitors borrowed at 4% and they decided to gamble and go build that warehouse or buy those extra trucks, and now I have to compete with them, but now rates are higher, I better take out my loan now too before they go even higher. So if I'm gonna stay in business and compete with them, I need more trucks, I need another warehouse, I need more employees, whatever it is. And so in other words, the point I'm getting at, rates going higher can actually drive behavior to take a loan in the same way that rates going lower can drive behavior to take out a new mortgage. I remember when we were buying our place here a couple of years ago, I think our mortgage is 5%. But you know, many people had mortgages at 2%, 2.5%, 3%. But rates started to go up in, you know, 2022, right when we were buying our place. And you know, I think when we first started thinking about it, they were around 4%. And by the time we actually got our mortgage done, it was 5%. And now I think they're what, at 6.5%, 6% or somewhere 5.5%, 6.5%. And so I'm just curious if you have seen it, as you've analyzed the real estate market over the last year. You know, we often talk about how rates have affected currencies and how they've affected bonds and how they've affected stocks. Have you seen anywhere the higher rates, perhaps prices aren't rising as much as they used to, but have you seen them really impact housing prices in a really negative way?
I mean, there's a lot to unpack there, but you know, one of the things that's so interesting about doing this show is, well, number one, it's pulled me so much closer into your world. And one of the things that I think people really appreciate about your perspective on markets is the grounded nature in which you look at them. And it's such an emotional world, the world of finance. Nothing is more emotional than real estate. Like it's such a core part of people's livelihoods that, you know, interest rates affect the cost of housing. Therefore, everything the Fed does, you know, adds another layer of emotion because of that direct impact. But, you know, one thing that the US has, and this kind of goes in line with what we talk about frequently or try to give some context to when we do these conversations, is one thing the US has that generally speaking, the rest of the world does not, is 30-year fixed interest rates. And so you have 2/3 of the country that's sitting at an interest rate 4% or lower. And most of that is in the 3s or lower. Government loans like VA loans and FHA loans had an opportunity in 2020 through 2021 to be locking in interest rates with a 2 in front of it. So what that has ultimately done is created a huge mobility issue. And generally speaking, there's just not enough inventory. So we, you know, looking at interest rates on a fixed rate basis, 30-year fixed rate basis, again, the number one question everyone wants to know if they talk to anyone in the lending world is, what are rates? And asking that question is like asking someone, how much does a bag of groceries weigh? there's just not enough information there to answer that. And again, interest rates change every day. When you're saying what are rates, well, what do you want to pay for the rate? You know, are you trying to get the cheapest or closest to no cost loan possible? Or are you trying to get the lowest payment possible? And I would often, you know, I would say to some extent, the problem isn't that interest rates in the US are too high when it comes to mortgages. It's that the cost of a lower rate is unjustifiable. And that's something I think you'll see very, very clearly when you use the app, because it shows you all the interest rates. It shows you the cost for each. And so if you want a really low rate today, it's available. You just need to incentivize the market more by paying them to take that duration risk. And, you know, push to shove, I mean, if you're going to spend a lot of money to get a lower payment, the difference in the savings that you get from that lower payment needs to eventually recover the cost that you put up front to get that lower payment. And if someone's only in a property for 2 or 3 years, generally that decision to pay a bunch of fees up front to get a lower rate is ultimately going to result in a financial loss. Now, going back to, you know, the core aspect of your question, the health of the market, you know, the other thing that's interesting too is the demographic that's in the market now, we're trying to get into the market to buy a home, is much younger than those who are sitting comfortably in a home with equity and a 3% interest rate. Now, that's not a great thing, but the reality is that, say, that millennial market or that Gen Z market that's now finishing up at university, they're buying their first home either as a primary residence or an investment. You know, I think a lot of people are starting careers off at pretty healthy numbers. You know, they're making high six figures, you know, 100K at least in a lot of these jobs that are requiring a minimum bachelor's degree. So at that type of income in certain markets, yeah, you're not going to go buy in Silicon Valley at that age, but they're not trying to. You know, a lot of these secondary markets where you can buy a single family home or starter apartment, you know, in the $300,000 to $400,000 or even as high as $500,000 range, they're making the income to handle, you know, a 6.5% interest rate. So I understand the emotional aspect that real estate creates. And I people have been calling for the end of the world, not only in equity markets, but in the real estate market since 2021. And there's a lot of popular channels and popular people on Twitter that they, you know, they love putting up charts. Generally speaking, they're showing year over year data. So it's a rate of change. And they try to use this rate of change as if an indicator that the world is collapsing. And look, the inventories are low. Therefore, sales are going to be low. And therefore, mortgage applications are going to be low. But none of that means that, you know, prices are destined for collapse because, you know, the number of deals that are being done, even the medium home price dipping down a little bit doesn't necessarily mean that this is some sort of crash in prices. So I think inventory is everything right now. And if I would look at the US economy as a whole and make a comment about housing and the economy together, it's housing inventory and employment. As far as I'm concerned, as long as employment is stable, and interest rates, like you said, we're not really seeing any kind of rate of change anymore. We're stabilized, at least from a Fed policy standpoint, in this 5.5% range. Inflation's not great, but it's not going up. So the bond market's not panicking anymore. If we get the 10-year back up to 5% and then down to 4.5%, I mean, is this the new normal? Maybe, but it's not like volatility in interest rates is skyrocketing like it did in 2022. So if employment is stable, we get this inventory situation stays tight, I just can't see that how that leads to any sort of significant decline in home prices, unfortunately, for those who are waiting.
I think the interesting thing for me is everything you just said is also part of the reason, again, why I think not in a perfect position, but the U.S. is to a certain extent positioned better than the rest of the world, because and a lot of it has to do with what you were talking about, is these 30-year fixed mortgages at 2, 3, 4%. I mean, that is amazing. I mean, when you think about it, that's amazing, right? But I don't know that other people know, or at least many people don't know, that other countries don't have these 30-year fixed mortgages. You know, Australia doesn't have them, Canada doesn't have them. And those are two of the biggest, you know, real estate markets, at least from a appreciation standpoint in the world. I'm pretty sure Germany doesn't have them. You know, I think maybe this is a little bit of a teaser. We've been doing a little bit of a research project somewhat related to this. So maybe we'll have some more to say on this at a future date. But, you know, again, you know, rates kind of drive everything and they're super important, but a higher rate. And this is one of the things we've been trying to explain to people over the last couple of years is why hasn't everything fallen apart yet? It's because, to your point, a higher rate doesn't necessarily mean the world collapses. It can mean that, but it doesn't have to mean that. And so, you know, we've seen that with currencies. We've seen that with, or at least with the U.S. dollar. We've seen that with equity prices. We've seen it with precious metals, even though interest rates are very high. You know, precious metals have held up. Real estate's held up in the U.S. And so, you know, to me, the stability of rates is almost more important than the absolute level of rates. So it's going to be really interesting to see whether rates continue higher, whether they just stay here, or whether they ultimately go lower. And, you know, I'm the first to say I don't know where rates are going, but I know that I know it's not as simple as just saying the rate is here, so X, you know.
Yeah, look, if they're, one of the things you say all the time is that, of course, the Fed is going to come in and save the markets if it needs to be saved. That's why they're there. And if we do have a situation, this is just purely hypothetical to paint a picture, right? Let's say we have a major crash in the next 6 months. Housing prices are going to go through the roof because you're still dealing with an inventory crisis. And anyone who's been sitting on the sidelines who still has a job, again, keep in mind employment is a big factor here. But if the Fed jumps in, one of the things they're of course going to do is stabilize the bond market. That means lower mortgage rates, and you're going to have a lot of people on the sidelines coming in to finally make that purchase, partly because of what you're saying, like this, the dynamic of higher rates and the uncertainty of the future has people anxious to make a move because it feels like, you know, now or never. But this, look, this 30-year fixed dynamic in the U.S. and the fact that so many people locked in really, really low rates, is a very underestimated advantage for the U.S. in the big macro picture. You think about it, if you've got a 3% mortgage rate and the Fed or the government's paying you 5%, you just sit on that fixed loan and you every little bit of liquidity you have, you give to the government and the government's paying your mortgage for you.
Or you short the yen. You short the yen, which continues to lose value. You park it in U.S. cash. And you make the spread, which is 5%. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah. And look, one of the other arguments too here is migration, as far as people leaving, you know, states that weren't tax friendly or politically, maybe, you know, most people weren't comfortable with. You see, you know, California is a good example. Chicago, Illinois is another good example. The Northeast, you know, New York just feels like a mess. Despite the fact that they are seeing significant, you know, migration out of those states, like you're saying, your mother-in-law with her property in California, like there's nothing happening in California home prices either. This isn't some sort of mass exodus. Like, you know, despite it's a perfect analogy for the U.S. Despite all the dumb things that we do, it's still the cleanest dirty shirt. No matter how bad California screws up, it's still just an amazing place to live. You know, how long can they get away with it? It's the same question we ask ourselves about the U.S., probably a lot longer than people expect. So, you know, I'm not in the prediction game either, outside of maybe, you know, a 30-day window when we're, you know, making a rate lock decision for a borrower. Generally speaking, you know, we're all just trying to navigate this day to day and use different types of frameworks to still be alive and somewhat mentally sane, you know, after, you know, a year goes by.
Absolutely. Well, that's what we're all about, like getting through the madness, staying sane, keeping your head when everybody else is losing theirs. So anyway, I think this was a good discussion. It was kind of a quiet week in the markets other than the bounce off the lows from last week. I think next week is going to have a few more exciting opportunities. I think May is a very pivotal month and we're just kind of coming into that. So it's buckle up because I think it's going to get interesting.
Is there something in May specifically? I know next week there's some you know Fed activity, but is just sell in May go away type of thing? Is there something else there?
Well, I think there's a I can't even remember off the top of my head. It's either I think Putin gets inaugurated on the something like that. I mean, he's already been elected, but I think there's something to do in Russia. You know, there's you know the Fed. We've got another CPI meeting. We've got the Treasury quarterly refunding next week. You know, we're going to start. You know, this last month we've had tax payments have come in. But we've got a number of, you know, Fed programs that are kind of rolling off, you know, from a liquidity perspective. And, you know, there's always been this sell in May and go away type of thesis. And we're starting to get into, you know, the heart of the election season. We're, you know, 6 months away from the election. So, you know, again, I'm not predicting a collapse in any markets, but I think the easy money for the year may have already been made. And now I could easily see us just going, you know, getting cut to ribbons, you know, violently sideways for the rest of the year, both to the upside and the downside. You know, that's one of the things we talked about, John, is, you know, we expected volatility in both ways. You know, over the last couple of weeks, we saw volatility to the downside. This week, we saw volatility to the upside. You know, it wouldn't surprise me at all. We'll be having this conversation 6 weeks from now, and we'll be right in the same place.
I mean, the idea of being an investor in the market versus trying to trade the market is very two different things. And man, talk about a stressful week for traders, because anything that made fundamental sense, markets ultimately traded opposite of that. To see Meta, I think, beat expectations and then get crushed because of the way they guided. At the same time, Tesla just on paper did not look good at all. But, you know, of course, Elon and Tesla as a whole making endless promises about the future, talked about robo taxis and that whole AI dynamic, and Tesla had a huge day. So it's one of those things where it's just like it doesn't even matter if you have the story right. It's a crazy world, and I think, you know, one of the things that we do great here and certainly you're most well known for is sticking to a framework. Don't get caught up and chopped to ribbons chasing, you know, the one move after the other. And if you have that framework, kind of like you do, you're getting to ride the wave up. And ultimately, we hope that you have some kind of defense in case there's a sizable pullback, even if it's 10%. But other than that, I mean, one of the things that I'm even reflecting on in this conversation is, you know, the U.S. feels like it's in a pretty good spot. And you know, with some of the advancements with AI and other things we're seeing in the earnings, and housing market's got an inventory issue, but it's not weak by any means. Home builders are confident. I know this is always the situation you have just before a crash, but you know, outside of some kind of event that we can't predict, you know, you gotta go with the winner.
Well, and I just say, like, where else are you gonna go? Like, are you gonna go put your money in China right now? Are you gonna go put your money in Germany right now? Are you gonna go put your money in Russia right now? Are you gonna go put your money in India right now? I mean, again, I recognize all the problems and the challenges that the U.S. has, but, you know, on a relative basis, we still look pretty good. And, I think one point to kind of wrap this up tonight is I sent out a tweet. I don't remember if it was yesterday or earlier this week. But one of the things that we've tried to do on the show, and listen, I still have to remind myself to do this all the time. And so, you know, one of the reasons I keep saying it on here is not only to reinforce it to myself, but to pass this along to everybody else, is markets don't move based on what you think should happen. Markets move based on what everybody else thinks is going to happen. And that's why markets are not a personal knowledge game. If you know that all fiat currency ultimately returns to zero and nobody else knows it, that doesn't do you a whole lot of good until everybody else realizes it. And so markets are not a personal knowledge game. They're a common knowledge game. And so when you're trying to figure out what markets are going to do, you have to figure out what everybody else is going to do. And everybody else doesn't think like you. So you have to try to think like other people. And that's not easy to do. That is probably the hardest thing to do, is to put aside your personal bias and think like somebody else who doesn't sit in your shoes. And if you can figure out what everybody else is going to do, that's probably where markets are going to trend. And that will, I think, at least help you understand why markets don't do what you think they should do, at least in the short term. Now, if you have a very good fundamental understanding of how things work, you will probably be right in the long term, but markets can trend against you for a long time in the short term. And I think this understanding, this whole personal knowledge versus common knowledge framework, will help you navigate those markets, these crazy markets, even better.
Well, Brent, like I said earlier, I know how much everyone loves hearing your thoughts on things. Although the show is called Milkshakes Markets Madness, it's really the Brent Johnson Show. So I appreciate everyone giving me an opportunity to share a little bit about myself and the project that we've been working on. So check out the future of mortgages, the future of mortgage AI, and what I am confident will be the beginning of a major disruption in the mortgage industry at lensend.com. Join Brent on Twitter at SantiagoAUFund. Find me there as well at John Kutzmita. And you can find this show at YouTube and on Twitter using the handle MilkshakesPod. That'll do it this time. We look forward to seeing everybody next week. It's Milkshakes Markets Madness. Have a great weekend, everyone. This show is provided for entertainment and informational purposes only. It should not be relied upon as legal, business, investment, or tax advice. Neither the hosts, guests, nor any funds they may manage intends to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies.